From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dave Gillette, with commentary by political scientist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University of New York at New Paltz.
Coming up this week, it appears Senate Minority Leader Ornstein will have to go on trial, but on fewer charges. Contract talks are underway between New York State and the Civil Service Employees Association, and a chat with Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen. That and much, much more this week on the Legislative Gazette. New York State's highest court ruled this week that Senate Minority Leader Manfred Ornstein can be prosecuted on charges he hired no-show workers. But the court, in a split ruling, dismissed criminal charges filed against the Manhattan Democrat for using the state payroll to pay campaign workers. The Court of Appeals said using the legislative payroll to pay campaign workers was not considered illegal at the time Ornstein did it. But the majority on the court also said hiring people who do no work can be prosecuted. Ornstein, his top aide, and two other Democratic senators were indicted by a Manhattan grand jury in 1988 on 665 counts. Most of those charges related to paying campaign workers with state funds and are now dismissed. In addition, all charges against one of the senators, Ralph Quattrociachi of Rochester, were dismissed by a lower court. But as a result of the ruling, Ornstein and the others will still face prosecution on charges of placing four persons on the legislative payroll who performed no work at all. Ornstein's not discussing the ruling with the press. His attorney, Jack Hoffinger, is speaking, however. Hoffinger says he's pleased at least some of the remaining counts have been dismissed, and he and Ornstein will work from there.
As for Senator Ornstein, there are about 50-some counts left, and those 50 counts involve two employees. Every 2 weeks or so, a certification is sent in for all 160 employees on the Senate minority payroll, so to speak, which gets certified. And every time such a certification goes in, that creates two counts. And since these people were on the payroll for about 6 months or so, you have a whole mess of counts, but they involve only two part-time employees.
Attorney Jack Hoffinger. R. Alan Shartok suggested to Governor Cuomo that even though there wasn't a law against using the legislative payroll to pay campaign workers at the time Ornstein did it, Ornstein still should not have used the payroll.
I think you're correct that all of us should leave the courts to judge Senator Ornstein's conduct. Absolutely. And I have no comment to make on that. I know the senator. I wish him well. I think of him as a reputable professional who has worked very hard for the people of his district and the people of the state. And I have only good feelings for him and only good things to say about him. So this has nothing to do with Senator Ornstein. And the law as it was and as will be interpreted. Let's forget the law for the moment. What is right? What is right, especially now, more clearly than ever before, is that you have to do more with less. Not less with more, that we can't afford to have public servants, you know, who are not working hard as public servants. Forget about the past. Right now, we're broke. I'm going to cut $1 billion out of $8 billion. We're going to have to lay people off. Well, how do you explain to the public or explain to yourself that you're going to lay some people off? But we, those of us who are politicians, we can afford the luxury of bringing people in who will help us to be reelected. To do what? To spend too much? So I think whatever the case was in the past, and assuming it's all legal and all right and all justifiable, you're at a different stage now. We must cut back. We've talked about it, a lot of us, for a long time. I have complained that the legislature spent over $1 billion more than I've asked them to over the last 8 years. I complained this year that after we finished our negotiation, they spent $295 million more than I wanted them to. They said they had the money. Well, now it's clear that they didn't. It's clear that they spent money we didn't have, just as we spent $70 million we were hoping to get from a bond issue and then didn't get that either.
Governor Cuomo speaking with our Alan Chartok on this week's Capital Connection program, which is heard on many of these public radio stations across New York State. And Alan joins us in the studio right now. What do you see now happening in the Ornstein case?
Well, there are a couple of interpretations here that are interesting. Most of the remaining counts, as I understand it, are misdemeanor counts and not felony counts. And the heart of the case has been ripped out. Now, the court, by a wide majority, said, hey, it's all right. You know, we can't find any law that says that incumbent politicians can't use their staffs, can't hire people to go out and campaign. That is what I consider to be reprehensible, because it's half of public campaign financing. In other words, the incumbents are all allowed to spend their money, public money, my taxpayer dollars, on this thing, but the other guys, the outs, can't have a commensurate opportunity. That's pretty bad, I'll tell you right now, and the governor knows it and said so. So without, by the way, specifically pointing the finger at Ornstein, which he went a long way not to do. My sense of what's happening in this case is that if Morgenthau proceeds, that's the DA, proceeds to go on the no-show counts, that a lot of people will be pointing at him and saying, yeah, you know, just angry because, you know, your major case fell apart and now you're just going to go on this other thing. But to expect anything else from Bob Morgenthau would be wrong, because that's the kind of man he is. He's a guy, when he's crossed, who gets very angry. And I expect him to go and see this thing through, although there are people, in very knowledgeable people in the legal field, who says that he will be forced to drop these counts.
There's another aspect in this case, one that is occurring in Albany, and that is Martin Connor's bid to become minority leader.
Yeah. David, the question is, will Connor succeed in ousting Ornstein? Here are the arguments for Ornstein leaving. And by the way, there's a sort of connection with Maggie Thatcher and what happened in England here. And that is, Hazeltine takes on Thatcher. Thatcher is removed, and in moves not Hazeltine, who did all the dirty work, but Thatcher's deputies, who proceed to divide up the vote, and we see what happens, and one of them wins. In the case of Manfred Ornstein, the two heir apparents have always been thought to be Emmanuel Gold from Queens and Donny Halperin from Brooklyn, these two state senators. They're not about to sit back and watch Marty Connor take over this thing. They may watch him sort of push Fred Ornstein aside, but if it's obvious that that's going to happen, then my bet would be that the major action would be between those two guys. So Marty Connor may end up, without knowing it, to be the stalking horse for the other two. Otherwise, if they think it's Marty Connor to win, they'll block him. And they will do everything in their power to keep him out and Ornstein in, the theory being that sooner or later Ornstein will leave and then they get their chance, if you follow my reasoning here.
Legislative Gazette political analyst Dr. Alan Chartok. A little over a week after Governor Cuomo proposed layoffs and furloughs as a manner of slashing New York's budget deficit, the state entered into contract negotiations with its largest employee union. Karen DeWitt reports.
The CSEA and the State Office of Employee Relations bargainers met behind closed doors to formally exchange demands in what promises to be the most difficult contract negotiations in recent state history. New York faces a billion-dollar budget gap in the fiscal year that ends March 31st, the same day the current union contracts run out, and it's possible the state's deficit could reach $3 billion in the next fiscal year. The CSEA, with 265,000 members, the state's largest union, maintains its opposition to Cuomo's proposal for a mandatory 5-day furlough of all state workers, says union president Joe McDermott.
CSEA will never agree to furloughs of our employees that are mandatory and require a pay cut in this fiscal year.
McDermott says the furloughs represent a violation of the current contract because they would result in a pay cut.
And if I was to characterize the furloughs, from my perspective, I would characterize them as an attempt to lock out his employees and also to cut their salaries by 2%.
But he says the union will talk about the furloughs as a sidebar to the main negotiating sessions. McDermott says Cuomo has presented a very limited number of options for the union by vowing to resist taxes, deficit notes, or one-shot funding mechanisms to come up with more money to pay state workers. Elizabeth Moore, the director of the governor's Office of Employee Relations and soon to become Cuomo's top counsel, agrees that the talks will be difficult, but Moore says without the furloughs, there'll be more layoffs.
I think the governor has already addressed that issue. He has indicated that other types of cuts would have to be considered and taken, and those cuts would include additional layoffs of state employees. It really boils down to a choice, and we'll be discussing with the public employee unions what their choices will be.
While the unions believe they can block furloughs, McDermott admits they have no say in how many people are laid off. Cuomo has said 18,000 people, or 10% of the workforce operating under the state's general fund budget, could be eliminated, half through attrition and early retirement. The Business Council, which represents many major upstate corporations, released a report advocating that the state impose a wage freeze for state workers. McDermott says he's against that.
I'm a little bothered that it appears to me that the governor's agenda appears to actually be the Business Council's agenda. All the things that have been proposed are the things that the Business Council seems to want. And what everybody clearly wants to forget that the state employees have paid their dues already in respect to some of this pain that is needed out there.
Moore says she does not automatically back the Business Council report.
I think that the Business Council's proposal has some benefits, some merits, but I think there are also a lot of things that it ignored about our continuing relationships with our public employee unions and the critical services and quality services that our state employees provide.
The Public Employees Federation, which begins its talks with the state Wednesday, is suggesting that a voluntary furlough plan approved in the early 1980s be better utilized. Under the plan, workers are permitted to make arrangements to cut their work time by up to 30%, but still keep their jobs at a lower rate of pay. PEF spokesman Ron Kermani says currently only 1,300 of the 60,000 PEF members are part of that program.
Over the years, the state has said, I'm sorry, PEF member, you're too valuable in my office. I cannot spare you another hour or 2 hours off and cut your salary that much. Operations need you here. Only last week, the governor said on Saturday, I can spare 50,000, 60,000 PEF members 5 days a week without pay. So one day we're too valuable, they won't give us the voluntary furlough time that we've requested as part of our contract.
Kermani says his union wants to talk about a possible early retirement plan and says PEF would like a better program than one devised by Cuomo and the legislature in the spring. Kermani says PEF is supporting the elimination of costly no-bid contracts in favor of doing the work in-house as a cost-saving measure. He predicts that the negotiations will be long and arduous.
It really comes down to horse trading and negotiations and good negotiations. What are you willing to give up? What are you willing to gain? In an effort to solve a contract or settle the contract.
Neither union seems to expect to have a contract in place by the time the old one expires. 3 years ago, the unions worked under terms of their old contract for 3 months before the talks were concluded. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
That report courtesy of the New York Public Radio Albany Bureau. As you just heard, there is a proposal for state workers to take a 2-year wage freeze. We have more on that from Bruce Robertson.
The report comes from the Public Policy Institute, the research affiliate of the Business Council of New York State. Ed McMahon, the Institute's research director, says the report calls attention to the critical dollars and cents issue with which the state is dealing. He says contracts for public employee unions for the past 10 years have been generous by any standards.
The base salary increases awarded in the contracts over the past 10 years have easily exceeded inflation by a proportion of roughly 100% to 81%. And that figure even understates the true extent of the pay increases that state workers have received because it does not take account of the step increments that all workers receive during their first 5 to 10 years in a particular salary grade. Essentially, anybody with less than 5 years in their current title or anybody who makes a certain longevity increment of 5 or 10 years receives 2 pay increases a year under our current system.
McMahon says the contracts are even generous when compared with those of the private sector. He claims the average state worker makes 6% more than someone in the private sector and that state workers pay less for better health insurance and have more paid vacation time and more paid holidays. The end result, according to McMahon, is that working for the state is a good job.
In light of the state's very severe fiscal problems, that it really is not asking too much to suggest, and that's what it is, a suggestion that one option, one alternative to massive layoffs of 25,000 or more employees next year to balance the budget, is to suggest that the number of layoffs could be minimized by freezing state workers' salaries. Trying to also always keep in mind that state workers' salaries are paid by workers in the private sector, and that, in fact, over the last year, we've got less workers in the private sector than we did a year ago.
The Business Council has heard no criticism of its report yet, but McMahon laughs at a recent newspaper article quoting a union spokesman saying the Business Council is a bunch of fat cats asking the poor to sacrifice.
Fat cats politically in this town, in terms of political power, I think everybody knows, are the public employee unions. So that comment I found a little laughable. I think the general reaction has been obviously not enthusiastic, but on the other hand, I think it's been less caustic than one might normally have expected, only because it's obvious, even to the unions, that something has got to give in this next contract. The state truly is in very serious trouble, and that nobody is faking that.
McMahon says if the state were a private sector enterprise, few would question layoffs and wage freezes as ways to eliminate a budget deficit. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
Joining us once again on the Legislative Gazette after a hiatus caused by the campaign for Lieutenant Governor is the current Lieutenant Governor of the state of New York, Stan Lundeen. He discussed some of this week's issues with our Brian Shields.
The state has now begun contract talks with its largest union. Yesterday, the Public Employees Federation urged the state to cut back on consultants to save jobs and to save money. What do you think of that idea?
Well, there certainly is probably some savings that we can make in terms of consulting contracts, and we will cut back. But we're in a service business, and 70% of our cost is employees, not consultants. Employees' costs are the major factor affecting state operations, and in a time of cutback, we don't want to lay anyone off. We believe that state workers work hard and work effectively, and anybody who doesn't agree with that should go to a prison and see what a correction officer's job is like, or go to a mental health facility and see what the direct care people go through, or go to a mental retardation facility and observe the same things. These are difficult, sometimes dangerous jobs, and we respect the people who perform them. To every extent possible, we will cut administrative positions where possible, but it's going to be impossible to isolate our public employees from the necessary contraction in spending in the state of New York.
Yesterday, the Times Union ran a story. I don't have the details with me, but it says the legislature itself, its staff, its spending, its computer systems, that kind of thing, has been growing. Where can you cut there? Is it just the employees?
I think there are more legislative employees in New York than any other state. It was somewhat shocking to me, learning of the growth and of the absolute number, greater than California and greater than other states. But I want to make it clear that the governor and I are responsible for the executive branch of government and all the agencies of state government. We regard the courts and the legislatures as separate branches of government. We have asked the legislature, as part of our budget plan, to take a 5% cut, to find a way to spend 5% less money. But we're not going to tell them how many employees they can have or whether their employees have to take furloughs, as we're proposing for every other state employee, or those kind of things, because we think that that would transgress the separation of powers of the branches of government.
The Business Council came out with its recommendation yesterday, a two-year wage freeze for state employees. Do you think that's something that the state would push for?
Well, we're about to commence bargaining with our public employee unions, as you mentioned, and I don't think the way to bargain is in public, but I think we're going to have to ask for substantial concessions from our public employee unions. And to the extent that they are able to cut back on wages or salaries, to the extent that they're able to accept freeze for a multi-year period of time, that will reduce the number of layoffs because we're going to have to cut back on our total workforce costs. And if we're able to do that by mitigating the increases or getting some concessions from the unions with respect to those people who are working, that will allow us to keep more people on our payroll and keep more people working.
Okay, one final question. There's a sort of a battle beginning, I guess, for the Senate minority leadership between Manfred Ornstein and Senator Connor. Do you think this is going to be a tough fight? Do you think the party might suffer some scars because of this?
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you, having been in a legislature in the Congress and having gone through a lot of these inter-party contests and understand that the result is taken by secret ballot, I know that these are very intense, and I know that the worst thing for anyone outside of the Senate Democrats to do would be to try to influence it. So I would never do that. I also learned when I was in Congress and involved personally in a couple of these opportunities that the secret ballot can be in a very elusive thing. One time, Congressman Downey and I were competing for a particular designation from the New York delegation, and we both had more promises than there were members. Added together, our promises exceeded the number of members that there were for at that particular time. So this is something that, well, I'm interested to read about, I'm interested to hear from senators about. Neither Governor Cuomo nor I, nor I think, should any outside friend of the Senate Democrats intervene. It's just something that they have to determine. And once their leadership is determined, obviously we will work with them as we are working with Senator Ornstein, the current minority leader at the present time.
Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen speaking with Legislative Gazette's Brian Shields. Joining us next with a look at some of the other news in state government this week is Paul Rosenthal with our Legislative Notebook.
A Democratic state senator has proposed a 3% surcharge on state income taxes paid by people who make more than $200,000 a year. Senator Franz Leiter of Manhattan said the surcharge would raise more than $1 billion a year for the deficit-riddled state treasury. He also called for elimination of the state's investment tax credit, saying that would save the state $220 million. Leiter said tax increases would be fairer than cutting services and programs as Governor Mario Cuomo has proposed. Governor Cuomo has canceled his third inaugural ceremony, saying it would be too costly. His previous inaugurals have involved hundreds of participants, bands, color guards, and donated New York food products. In a five-paragraph statement, Cuomo said this year's ceremony would come at a time of national economic crisis that will require inconvenience, sacrifice, even pain for millions of New Yorkers. Cuomo said he hopes New Yorkers will understand the need to forego the ceremony, saying he is nonetheless grateful for being reelected to a third four-year term. The State School Boards Association told Governor Cuomo if he wants to save money, he should repeal his $150 million program to raise teachers' pay. In a letter to Cuomo, the association says repealing the pay program would be fairer than chopping state aid to individual school districts. Cuomo has proposed lopping $200 million from state aid payments to schools, with wealthy school districts losing the most and poorer districts the least. The proposal is part of the governor's plan to avoid a $900 million deficit. The association says Cuomo could save the same amount of money by canceling the pay raise program and abolishing certain state mandates on construction contracts and school operations. The association says teachers' salaries have risen to a suitable level and do not need the boost the Cuomo program provides. Results of a four-year study on the economy of the Adirondack Park released this week criticized the report of Governor Cuomo's Commission on the Adirondacks in the 21st Century. The report was prepared for Cornell University with the sponsorship of several foundations and the Adirondack North Country Association. It says the commission report did not address the economic impact of its recommendations, which would in turn affect the ability of the state to preserve the area. The state's highest court has ruled the state has to pay its property taxes on time. The court ruled that the state, as a property owner, cannot withhold payments of local property taxes to Fulton County. Lawyers for the state, which owns some 380 parcels of land in the town of Northampton, unsuccessfully argued that the government should not have to pay taxes while challenging an increase in the area's tax assessment. A judge has cleared the way for the first home buyer to move back into the Love Canal neighborhood of Niagara Falls. State Supreme Court Justice Joseph Mintz rejected a bid by environmental groups to prevent efforts by the Love Canal Revitalization Agency to resettle the neighborhood surrounding the former toxic waste dump. An attorney for the group said he will appeal Mintz's decision. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
And that about does it for this week. Join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Gallettly.
The program is made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available by calling 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution.
Some of the counts against the state Senate's minority leader, Manfred Ornstein, have been dismissed, but he may still have to go on trial. I'm Dave Gallettly, and coming up on this week's edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll have the latest news concerning that case and more. Join us each week for the Legislative Gazette.